You're listening to STB Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Smita Mishra, and welcome to STB Radio. As you know, we are doing a series of interviews with several speakers of our upcoming spring STB conference that will be in San Francisco, California, from April 4th through 7th this year. So be sure to check out stpcon.com for more details on the conference. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is Software Test Pro. So let's meet our guest for today. We are interviewing Karen Johnson, a renowned name in the world of testing, and one of those leaders who truly inspired the community with her work. So welcome to STP Radio, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you.
I would like to start with a quick introduction of yours. Tell us a little about you, Karen, like what are you currently doing in testing and anything you would like to share.
Sure. I've been in software testing for a long time. I started out many years ago as a tech writer and moved into testing. I found it to be more fun and ended up staying. And I myself am really shocked by how long it's been. I don't think I like to talk in years anymore. It's no longer really as flattering as it used to be. I've done a lot of things over the years, and I guess it's been the variety in my career that I, as I look back now, that I think's been the most interesting.
Bob Gale, and I was interviewing him the other day, and he said, "I'm a dinosaur now if you go by
years." Right. I get that. I think we're probably about the same age. Like, I now hire people who they've been alive in some cases not as long as I've been in the field. Like, you don't even want to do the math. Just don't do the math. Don't think about it.
Yeah.
I actually just started a new job a couple of weeks ago, so I can't really say anything about that because A, I don't really have clearance from them, and B, I really don't know a whole lot yet, so I can't really give away any super secrets anyway. So there is that. So even at this point, dinosaur or not, I'm still making changes. So
great. So thanks for sharing that, Karen. We'll come back to your writings and a lot of details that we have about you. But for now, let's talk about the conference. So you are our opening keynote for the conference. And the title of the keynote is How Nancy Drew Prepared Me to Become a Software Tester. I really like this title. And honestly, I'm interested in knowing how you got this idea. And can you tell us a little bit about the message you want to give with, the audience with it?
I'd like to, because I don't think it's immediately obvious. And I think it's one of those titles that it's one of those talks that could go in a lot of directions. So I'm sure people are kind of curious what that is all about. So the basic is that I grew up reading Nancy Drew novels and, you know, had girlfriends that we were reading a lot of Nancy Drew. And I think we sort of wanted to be detectives and dig into things. And it was kind of fun. And I guess one of the things that happens after years of speaking is I'm finally giving myself a little bit more liberty with topics. I think for a long, long time, I felt like I had to prove I was technical and I wanted to speak on things that were very directly related to what I was doing or very highly tangible. And now I think years later, I feel like, you know what, I can have a little bit of fun. I can actually lighten up a little bit and draw correlations to testing from pretty much everything in my life. And I wanted to do this too. But I have one message behind this conference talk that I don't think people will get. And I realized that now, like if I don't state it, people are not going to pick up on it. And if you can indulge me, I'll try to walk you through this thinking because it might just take just a minute. I think what's going on in the testing world is that the whole testing profession is changing. It started slowly and it's really been picking up a lot of momentum. And I could go down two paths with it. One is that the field itself is changing, and so testers need to change as well. So what change am I talking about? I'm talking about agile teams where lots of different people on the team may be doing the testing, and it's not just the tester testing anymore. It could be a developer. In some cases, it could even be a product owner. And that's radical, and it's different. And it's changing testing for us, and I think as a result, we need to change. And so part of that, and this is like if I could highlight it in yellow, this is what I'd highlight. Part of that is if as testers on a team, we have to teach other people how to test, we, nearly all of us, have to learn how to teach testing. So maybe 5 or 10 years ago, we'd go to a conference and we'd think, oh, the experts teach other people how to test. But now nearly all of us have to teach other people. And I don't think if you're in a team, a good way to start teaching other people is to get into something with scary language or something that's filled with technical jargon, like, oh, well, let's do some equivalence partitioning, testing of boundary conditions of this. It's like, come on now, lighten up a little bit, right? Like, so when I look at Nancy Drew, I drew correlations to another book and to some other works that are out there with much more basic language. Like, what do you see? What do you think about this? What does this experience in the software make you wonder about? What do you think you should test next? To sort of help teach other people how to test without making it a daunting thing to learn. And I bet that's probably an unexpected part of the talk.
I don't mean to really dig deeper into this because I know it's a keynote talk and we would all want to actually hear it live in front of you. But I do have a small question here for you because I read in the abstract that your keynote description that you sent, it says that you want to take a perspective of, yes, I'm a tester. Indeed, I solve mysteries. So this one sentence, I seriously want to understand it a little more better. Like, how do you feel that being curious, feeling that you have a mystery to solve, or having an investigative mindset helps people be a good tester?
Well, I think some of it's obvious. I mean, I think some of the rote, frankly, boring testing that takes place is just confirming that things work and is the testing that most people who are not testers think about. But I think to really be a tester, you have to dig in and think about what things could go wrong and not spend, it's kind of like the great debate in software testing about the checking versus testing, right? I'm not really checking that things work. I mean, I'm assuming that there's a unit test and we've already confirmed the software works. So now I really need to dig in to see what could go wrong, where could the problems arise. And that, when I look at that, I think that's where I'm adding the benefit to a team, right? It's not just to be a manual checker of things, but to really add ideas to where things could go wrong and try to be in front of that, not just to be a naysayer either, but to consider problems that might happen in production and be in front of them happening.
Right. Thank you so much, Karen. Thanks for sharing that. Since you've just mentioned that you've also been in business for many, many years, and you gave a keynote on the major milestones of your career last year, so and you gave folks some insight on how you got started and how you got to where you are. So can you give our listeners some insight of that talk in how your career really progressed?
Sure. Somewhere along the way, when you do a conference talk, you have to introduce yourself, which I always find that part really awkward. So I decided to try to do a slideshow that wouldn't last anything longer than 3 minutes, pretty much the length of playing a slideshow up against a song. And in doing that, it really forced me to go back and look at my career. Last year was also happened to be 30 years. And so that amount of time, when you're trying to consolidate it to like 3 minutes or less, is really that's a lot to do, and it also made me really reflective. And I enjoyed doing that, and I thought it would be helpful for other people to realize it's not like I've always been in mobile testing or in any kind of testing. I mean, it's been a massive variety over the years, which I feel very fortunate about. I personally often make a joke that I've had that I traded stability for variety. And that's ended up being
Very
what it
well said.
is.
Thanks for sharing that, Karen. But the most intriguing part of your career to me is that I have always wondered what your secret would be. Like many of your speaking engagements and articles, you talk about how to be more collaborative and successful with offshore teams and with outsourcing. And frankly, I'll be honest, most of my career has been around outsourcing, and I've been part of vendor teams as offshore teams. So I'm really interested in knowing more about what your thoughts are. What do you think is one thing or top few things that one should consider to ensure success when you're working with on-site offshore teams?
Well, I guess I was really lucky to have an opportunity to work with an offshoring company. I kind of thought that opportunity might happen at some point, and it did. And I guess 2013, I started working with a company in the Middle East and saw what it was like to actually go from a rotation of on client site in America to out of country and sit down with testers and then try to translate. Well, your customers are looking for XYZ, and are you really aware of what they need? Do you have a sense of what's going on? And it was kind of an eye-opener for me, and I wanted it that way. I wanted to be able to work with an offshore team and understand like what some of the roadblocks are. It's almost akin to working as a remote worker. Remote workers, I think, sometimes get a different perspective than people on site, and you start to realize like the hallway conversations and the subtle things that happen that make you more tuned in when you're either on site or, not a remote worker or not an offshore tester. And we lose stuff in translation. So trying to be the one to deliver that is big. I think if you're working as an offshore tester, I don't think there's anything wrong in asking. And I think one of the big confusions I saw is the economy in the business world is changing at a very rapid rate. And so you could work on site, and today the priority is X, and tomorrow the priority is Y. And you're expected and need to shift on a dime, as they say. And if you're remote or you're offshore, you don't pick up on that sometimes. And then what I saw happen with testers, and it's not to pick on any one testers or any one company, they don't get it. From a distance, they're like, gosh, this person can't make up their mind. Like yesterday, they asked for this, and now they want that. But if you were on site and you saw the pressures shift and you saw the business need shift, you would naturally shift as well. So I think if you're remote or offshore, I think you should just be willing to pick up on the clues just quicker and just go with it.
I really like your passion for making that happen, that communication part between on-site and offshore. Besides this, I think you're also well known for your passion about heuristics and the art of asking questions. So how do you feel that asking questions help people be better testers?
Oh, well, I mean, I think almost so much of what I even do is really about asking questions, preferably at the right time in the right way, which, okay, so what's right time and what's the right way? And I try to address that in a webinar that I recorded, but I could ask a developer a question such that they even see a defect that they're either have just made or they're about to make and just even prevent a whole defect from happening. So I would never minimize the value that just asking questions can provide. It can provide a lot. It can make somebody go, oh, right. Okay. Yes, I didn't think of that, and walk away and go and fix something. I want to make a comment to something that you said earlier, which is, I didn't really set out to necessarily make a name for myself, or to try to be famous or anything. I kind of laugh at that one, but I think for me, and this kind of goes into advice for the future, so if I can digress, I'm probably a nightmare to interview in that way. I try to be better than I even used to be. So I think for me, I joined the software testing career when it first started in the whole industry. Like there didn't used to be testers. And for that matter, there wasn't really even that much of a computer industry, right? And I happened to grow up in a region, the Boston area. I happened to grow up in a region where it was booming and they were part of what started it. And so finding work and finding interesting work there was, it was doable. It was achievable. And I had enough of a technical background to kind of fit the bill, to kind of convert myself to be a tester. And so there was some real luck, timing, and locale that really helped me. But if I look now, so if somebody was entering the field now and they said, okay, I'm a journalism major, I'm working as a tech writer, do you think I could step into this field and go forward and have some of the same, success and fortune that you've had? I'd actually tell them, I don't think it's really possible. I think the industry has changed so much that I think you would need a different background and have different expectations. I know at conferences and just different places that I you know, have been around recently, that is one of the number one things on a lot of testers' mind. What is my career going to look like? And
right.
I have to say, you know, I think I was fortunate in a lot of ways, but I think the future is going to look very different.
That's so true, actually. And frankly, there is no one template to success, just like there is no one template for testing. I mean, there's nothing you can just do and say, okay, since I'm taking the same steps, I'm going to have the same output as somebody else.
There is one thing that I did that was probably a little risky, and that was multiple times in my career, I would change jobs, contracts, whatever it took, to work on things that were very current, very recent. And doing that, I think, often put me at the forefront of working on something. Like I was doing mobile work in 2009, 2010. So if you can get in on something really early on, I mean, that's, you know, but you have to seek those opportunities, and you have to
first mover advantage, as they call it. Yes.
Yeah. And I've done that a few times. So I think that was really big.
Yeah, and if you dig deep into that, maybe it was your vision or your understanding that this is coming up because you understand the industry, you've been there long enough, you can see it coming, and so you got into it at the right time.
I think so. I think you have to see it leaving too. Like, you know, in another year or two, are we going to really separate mobile testing from any other testing? Like, that's not going to really happen so much.
Right. So in a lot of these changes that have happened, Karen, I have come across one peculiar change. Like there used to be a time of independent testing where what testing teams and development teams used to be in watertight compartments, not talking to each other so that they don't influence each other. But now I see the trend is changing. You also had a talk in 2014 that called Tester Love Developer. So how important do you think is the relationship between developers and testers, and how have you seen it evolve in from where it was earlier to now, where from kind of competing to collaborative that it is now?
I don't think I ever felt competing, but I know that there are people at different companies who maybe felt that way. I think even my first role in testing, I actually had been the tech writer at the same company, so I already had, you know, relationships and understood the people who were building the software. I never felt separated from them. And I think to learn more, I often had felt that I had to tiptoe over and talk to the developers. So I think from the very beginning, for me, collaboration was a big one. In 2014, I was at a conference where the theme was like man loves machine. So I thought I'd play on the theme and do tester loves developer. And in doing that, I guess I realized testers are really the helpmate of developers. And in some ways, that sounds, I don't know, subservient. Like I could imagine some people feeling like a problem with that. Like they would prefer not to see themselves that way. But I think really we're the helpmate of the whole team. And I don't think being that is such a bad thing. I think for me, working as a consultant for a number of years helped me, because one thing that I do all the time is I'm always asking myself, like, what value am I providing? So regardless of what my position is or what the role is, or, you know, I'm a contractor, I'm a consultant, I'm an employee, whatever, am I really providing a value, and how am I best doing that? I think the best soul searching you can do is asking yourself, and you don't have to tell anyone else the answer, but ask yourself, like, what is the biggest value that you provide when you're on site or even if you're remote? And then are you doing that? And if you're not providing a value, then you should probably be anxious about your job regardless.
That's actually coming up in a big way for testers and developers both, to not be just people manager and to actually be more valuable to the team as for your skills than to just try to do something, just try to manage people.
Well, you know, the irony of that, right, is my current position is senior manager and my last was director. So why don't we talk about that? So for people who've never worked with me on site, they might not know that I often don't have any direct reports, and I don't always recommend that I even have any. In fact, in a recent situation, I said, you know, can I really influence people without having them report to me? If I can, then that's even more impressive than I'm influencing people because, oh, by the way, they report to me and they feel like they have to listen to me.
Right.
So it's a better challenge for me when people don't, and I still have to somehow come in and create an influence in some way.
Awesome. Moving on from this topic, Karen, because there are so many questions I have on so many topics, and in particularly, I like that there are so many of our passions that are like congruent, in particularly two of them. One of your speakings in 2014 was about let's pair UX and testing. And you also had an article, 26 Ways Testers Work with UX Designers. I'm myself very passionate about this topic. I'm myself speaking on this kind of similar topic at STPCon this time. So what do you think is the critical advice for testers on this topic?
I think UX has changed greatly. I think it's some of the coolest stuff that's going on. I just think it's become so fun. I think if you go back years ago, the UX behind things was pretty boring. I think we were just trying to create systems where things were not confusing. And now I think we have like awesomely interactive mobile apps, and just there's apps where people talk about the UI more than they talk about even what the app's doing, because there's just such cool stuff going on. And I think it's some of the more interesting stuff to do. So if I have a UX person near me, I'm trying to learn as much from them as possible, because there's all these options and ways to interact with software that we didn't have before.
Right. And it's kind of, what do you call it, make or break point these days, I believe, because all the apps that are coming up, everyone has a competing product with a better UX. And if you are not going to give your user the best experience that you can possibly give, then you might as well not build that app, because nobody's going to use yours. Somebody's going to go to your competing products.
Yeah, agreed. Plus, you know, there's the whole social aspect, so different. Like years ago, I never would have worked on a product where I could go to an app store and see reviews of it. I mean, the market is pretty blunt about, you know, this last update was terrible, you know, there's defects. I mean, you get immediate feedback now.
Oh, people are very, very open about that. And forget about going to the Play Store and finding about the reviews. People would just tweet about it. And without,
sure.
Even if I don't know about that app, I get to know about the reviews for sure. Okay, somebody's talking about it. It's not good. I don't even want to go there and look at it.
Agreed. That's where the whole machine learning comes into play too. So there's a lot of companies now will have like a machine learning group where they can go in, pull the social media and get a sense of sentiment of what's going on out there. And I think that can feed back into testers and for that matter, the whole team, and figure out like what we need to do.
So under common passion, the second one that I share with you, Karen, is data. So I see that we both seem to be passionate about data warehousing and testing around it. And we've seen data become very important to the world. Like I've said it many times now, that data is omnipresent. After God, it's data. And it's also, it's also becoming the new currency now, because everyone wants to secure their data, want to exchange their data, and it's critical to every organization. How have you seen the importance of data and the focus on it grow over the years?
Well, I think, yeah, the machine learning groups, data science, that certainly points to it. I think some years ago, I don't think people thought of data very much. It was a very unglamorous part of testing, just sort of something in the background. But I think people realize it now. There's a lot of apps and a lot of software out there that, you know, have a search mechanism, or the functionality is not even that important, which sounds a little strange. It's the data behind it. I mean, you think about looking at restaurant reviews or trying to book a hotel, or it's the data. It's not really even the tool that gets you to it. It's just trying to find your way through it. Not to mention inside a company dealing with, you know, machine learning groups and data scientists to figure out things like understanding user stats, like behind the scenes, the down deep stuff, like, okay, we've got a mobile app. What devices are being used? What screen resolutions are they really using? Does it change country to country? How do I plan my testing because of that? It's some of the thinking that you have to do now that we never looked at that before.
Yeah, I know. And it surprises me that when people talk about data and big data, they're all about algorithms and the science behind it, the modeling behind it. And I always feel that, that is important, but that's the easier part of it. Frankly, the tough part of it is which data really matters. Maybe that's the art side of it, but I find it that the science part of big data and data analysis is easier, but the art side of it is really difficult.
I think both sides are pretty difficult. So I've sat with enough machine learning people that for them, you're right, they talk in algorithms, but they don't, there's a gap where they don't always think from a business perspective. You know, they're usually incredibly smart and they can pull whatever you want. They just need somebody to instruct what they want and what they're looking for so that they can find a way to, you know, as you put it, build the algorithm or pull whatever the data is. But there's a gap between, like, a lot of times I'll look at machine learning people and be like, well, what can you get from me? And they're looking at me, well, what is it you need? And so trying to be the bridge between that is kind of the current trick.
So do you think, Karen, that it, testers should look at it as their responsibility or part of their job to try to understand, besides just mapping that, okay, whether it has picked the data it was supposed to also understanding that data? Should that be your tester's job?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things about testers is we can bridge the gap between a lot of things. Sometimes it's, you know, from UX to the developers with how something's actually implemented to, you know, product owners and making sure we really understand what the vision is and that it actually plays out that way. I mean, context-driven school of testing, right, mentions right up front, you know, the product itself isn't the solution. It's like, have you actually solved the problem? And you can't lose sight of what it is that the customer really needs. The software is just a matter of how it gets played out to solve that problem. And we get really distracted by just all the technical things and being on a tech team and thinking like tech and forgetting to think like the business and what customers really need. And I think we can be the gap between a lot of things. And I think machine learning might be one of them right now.
Yeah. Said perfectly. One quick question, which is apart from your talks and presentations, you were part of a book that was called Beautiful Testing in 2008, I believe. So can you tell us about your about that writing and your thoughts on that topic?
Wow, I think you know my background better than my family does. This is amazing. You have done some research.
Some research, yes.
Wow. Actually, that's a really emotional topic. And people, for some reason, people don't really ask. For one thing, it's now some years ago. But I ended up in a situation working on software that I had a family member who was pretty much dependent on the same kind of software. It wasn't exactly the same company, but it was basically the situation of, I've worked on software exactly like this, and this software is now helping to keep this person alive. Mm-hmm. So it was really highly emotional and very charged. And I guess as I look back, I probably couldn't have shared any deeper with the community than to write about it. And if I didn't end up in a situation where I was writing where it was completely not for profit, right? Every author in that book signed, you know, any profits that were made were given away, right? So like I didn't make any money on that. It wasn't like I was trying to exploit a situation to make anything out of it. It was just really an opportunity to kind of draw the correlation between just how real software can be and how it can affect, you know, affect yourself. Right. And I guess it goes back to one of the things I do every time I speak is I try to share something about me personally that has some relevance. And I think the chapter in that book says a lot about me personally, but it also shows my relationship with software. I do the same thing when I'm, you know, speaking in person.
Wow. So you plan to bring up another book, anything on those lines or some other?
Probably not on that, but when I look back at Nancy Drew, I mean, it feels a little silly, but very personal to me. I mean, I read a lot of Nancy Drew mysteries and it kind of, for me, brings up a lot of childhood memories and, you know, maybe it will for other people.
I know. Those are the only mysteries that I have read, frankly, only Nancy Drew.
That's funny. None of those. You know what I found out doing a little bit of research is Nancy actually had a different name in different countries, and she was translated into 45 different languages. So So when I picked it, I thought, okay, I'm not just thinking like a North American, right? Like, this is going to be globally, people should be able to relate at some level.
Yep. It's a very popular mystery book here in India, too. I have an interesting question for you, Karen, moving beyond your writing and any work that you have done so far. So when you watch interviews with seasoned veterans, whether they are a movie star, a famous politician, writer, sports athlete, most of the interviews end with a popular question. And no, this is not your last question, but so being that you are a well-known and respected veteran in testing, I want to ask you, how do you want people to remember Karen Johnson years from now? Like, what do you want them to think of when they read your stuff or when they remember you, them to think
of? Wow, I just got goosebumps from that. I wasn't expecting that question. just so people listening know, like, I don't have the question list ahead of time. So this is feels very live and very fun.
Very impromptu.
That's a good question. I'm actually glad you've asked that. I've reached a different place in my career now than I was even just a short 2 years ago or 3 years ago. I've definitely hit a spot, and maybe Bob Galen will relate to this and some others as well. I've hit a spot where, for me, I want to give to as many people that I can as possible. I think you feel, and I'm saying you, but I really mean me, because I think it may be relatable to other people, but I think you hit a spot where you feel like the best thing you can do for your profession is to pass the baton on to, like, the next group of people coming behind you. And it's very bittersweet and wistful for me. But like in 2015, very real situation, I hired several people, but just to kind of draw on one example, I hired one mobile tester. And as I watched this tester physically, literally walk into the team, you know, find her desk, her seat, her role, I all but had tears in my eyes, because I felt like that would have been me. That was exactly what I would have done, that kind of immensely hands-on kind of work. And I don't really work quite like that anymore. I'm much more likely to be hiring and staffing and kind of passing the baton on to the next group. And that's what you want to do. That's just how you want to leave your field. I want to leave it. It's almost personal, right? It has less to do with the company that I'm working at. I'm looking at people at a very individual level, like, how can I help them? So say 5 or 10 years from now, when I'm retired and gone, because that will happen one of these days, who will I have helped? And like, how many people will I have helped? And like, I need to be working on that on a chronic, pretty much daily basis to do that, if I really want to have left something behind. It's a lot of responsibility, but I think that's what I should be doing.
What a beautiful way of saying it, passing on the baton. Wow. And actually, you do help a lot of the community members, and I can say that personally, because I remember about a year back, 2 years back actually, when we barely knew each other, I just reached out to you and I said, you worked on various domains, I need help for my domain presentation at STP, and you recorded 2 videos for me, if you remember.
I do remember that, actually.
yeah, thank you. So yes, here is your final question for today. What is the one thing that you are looking the most forward to about this STPCon?
I think it's very much the same as I have for conferences for a long time. I am a big believer in the community. I think a lot of software testers enter the field, don't realize it's a profession, and that we have a really great community. The community's done a lot for me over the years, so I'm always looking to find a way that I can, you know, meet other people in the community and help to foster it. And I think a lot of that is when you go to a conference, like, being on the floor and getting out and meeting people, and you never know, you're like, you just completely never know the way you might be able to make a connection and help people. Like, you know, earlier this week, I put a couple of people in touch, somebody who's looking for a job, somebody who's looking to hire. I don't make anything off of that, right? I'm like just trying to make the connections where I think I can do that. So I think STP very much will give that kind of opportunity to, I won't know exactly, but I'll find, I'm sure, opportunities just being on the floor and meeting other people.
That's the same that I would also be looking forward to networking, and I'll be so looking forward to meet you after hours and catch up with you.
We need to do that. I keep knowing you electronically and not as much in person, so.
Yes, we will make sure that we meet this time and spend some time together.
That'd be good.
Thank you so much, Karen. Thanks for your time and for being a great guest on the show. It was actually fun interviewing you, and a lot of learning too.
Thank you.
Everyone out there, thanks for listening, and feel free to message us or tweet us if you have any comments to share. And if you haven't yet scheduled for the conference, go for it. Go to stpcon.com and pick one of your several options that are there. See you all at the upcoming STP at San Francisco. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of STP Radio. Stay tuned for more episodes, and don't forget to check out stpcon.com to learn more about the conference being held at the Westin San Francisco Airport Hotel, April 4th through 7th.